This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton and adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, March 12th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Ryan, you're at South by Southwest right now. You're very busy. What do you have lined up for today?
You say I'm out South by Southwest. I'm at a festival that is 2 miles from my house.
Nice.
Well, not too much, but you know what I mean? I live pretty close to downtown Austin, so it's not, terrible. But I am. I love it. It's great. It's one of my favorite times of the year. But today, I am got a couple panels. So I'm doing the Daniels are doing a big panel about how they made Everything Everywhere All at Once. So there should be some cool stuff there. Sydney Sweeney's doing a talk, so I'm going to check that out. And then I've got the premiere of The Fall Guy tonight. So I got some stuff on the deck here. But so obviously, keep an eye on Slash Film, and a lot of these stories from these panels and stuff end up showing up on the site. So if you want to see what I'm up to, that's the best place to look.
Yes, we're going to talk about a couple of those stories that are actually up on Slash Film already at the end of today's episode. More stuff. We actually have people like actively working on things from Q&As and stuff that you've attended already right now. So as people are listening to this, more stuff is going to be flooding onto slashfilm.com from South by Southwest. So definitely stay tuned there. We have like reviews of big movies that have come out already there. I'm very jealous that you're seeing The Fall Guy tonight. That sounds incredible. I'm really like fingers crossed, hoping for great things from that one. So let's get into it. So tell me how Dune Part 2 has performed at the box office. I think that this past weekend was its second weekend. Tell me how that's gone for it so far.
Yeah, so let's just go over the top three real quick, because those were all three new movies. Kung Fu Panda 4 opened atop the charts. It actually made $58 million, which was quite a bit above the expectations that I had seen. It did really well. It was another win in the animation realm for Universal, who has Illumination and DreamWorks, and that's been going well for them. So cements Jack Black as a A-list movie star capable of putting butts in seats. He doesn't get quite enough credit for that. So I just like to point that out. So there had been a lot of people that assumed Dune would maybe hold on to the number one spot, but not taking anything away from Dune here. Dune Part 2 dropped just 44% in its second weekend, pulled in $46.2 million. And a 44% drop for a blockbuster like that, well, other competition has entered the marketplace, is very, very good. Just for like context, that's stellar. It also maintained its status as the number one movie internationally over the weekend. So it has now made $157.2 million domestic, $212.4 internationally, for a grand total just shy of $367 million. It's on track to probably make around 600 million, if not a few shekels more. Since the first one made 400 million, that's pretty damn good. And as I mentioned before, the original ended up adding like 30 million to its total because of the re-release that led up to Part 2. And I really think that $30 million is pretty much, that's like half Dune 2's money, half that movie's money, because people were seeing it to get ready for Dune Part 2. So all good news for there. I think that's great news for, even though I didn't love the movie, I think it's fantastic news that that movie is making as much money as it's making. And then we had Imaginary, the Blumhouse scary bear movie. It made like $9.9 million, which pretty much made its budget back on opening weekend. So, not a home run or anything for Blumhouse, but maybe like a single. It just kind of proof that their business model is pretty good, just because even when something is kind of just does just okay, they've right. pretty much ensured they'll be all right. So that, you know, just kind of right in the middle there. So yeah, that's
really strange that there's two imaginary, you know, imaginary centric major movies coming out from the United States of America this year. You know,
wildly got, like, different, wildly different takes too, like wildly different ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, just like really bizarre. One of those sort of like Dante's Peak volcano type of situations arising once again. So
where do you fall on that one? I like Volcano more than Dante's Peak. Where do you fall?
You know, I think I've only seen Volcano of those. I don't remember anything about Dante's Peak. It's possible that I saw it when it came out, but I have no memory of that. But I do like Pierce Brosnan quite a bit, so maybe I should go back and revisit that.
You and me both, sir.
So one thing that I wanted to mention here, there's an interesting story that came out like right before the Oscars happened about a potential plagiarism accusation against the Holdovers and the writers of the Holdovers. So Simon Stevenson, who is a screenwriter on Luca, he also worked on Paddington 2, basically like months ago filed a complaint with the Writers Guild of America, basically saying that like he wrote a script called Frisco. And he was saying that The Holdovers was, I'll just read the quote here. The meaningful entirety of the screenplay for The Holdovers has been copied from the Frisco screenplay by transposition. This includes the Frisco screenplay's entire story, structure, sequencing, scenes, sequential subbeats within scenes, line-by-line substance of action and dialogue, characters, arcs, relationships, theme, and tone. Like, that is a lot, and that is a big accusation. We hear a lot of plagiarism stories. You know, they hit the news every once in a while. I'm thinking one that jumps out to me immediately in my memory, because I probably had to write it up, you know, for some other website at the time, was like James Cameron's Avatar was hit with a bunch of accusations, maybe like a lawsuit or something like that. A lot of times the stuff either gets settled out of court or it just gets thrown out, because it's really tough to prove plagiarism in scenarios like this. Variety had like this whole big article about how these accusations had been made against David Hemmingson, who wrote the Holdovers, and director Alexander Payne, who directed the Holdovers and also contributed some to the screenplay, even though he's uncredited there. So it's just kind of a fascinating thing. And Hannah Shaw Williams, who writes for Slashfilm, she's one of our editors. She's great. She's been on the podcast before. She wrote this whole article at Slashfilm about how she thinks the accusation is pretty ridiculous. And I think she makes some compelling points there. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that. I'm sure you probably have been too busy dealing with South by Southwest stuff to even see this story or have like a real take.
Oh, I definitely, you know, you're standing in line. Sometimes you get to check stuff out. I definitely looked this over, and I think initially I was like, oh no. And then like, yeah, I don't know. Like, but, I think I'll say this. I think Hannah's assessment of it is worth taking a look at. I don't want to weigh in, because like I'm a writer. There was at one point like people, we like at an old website I worked for, we found out this like other website was literally just plagiarizing all of my articles word for word, and you know, like, and so like, yeah, plagiarism sucks. You spend time writing, it's horrible. And I can't imagine if you actually felt that like your script had been taken and is now collecting Oscars for somebody else. But so I don't want to, you know, without knowing the actual facts of it, I guess I don't want to, but yeah, it did. I will say, Hannah, it seemed dubious a little bit if you dug into it, but who knows?
Yeah, some of the connections seemed maybe, yeah, a little bit like a stretch, but I would encourage everybody just to sort of make up your own minds about it and read the Variety report, which lays out, you know, the case for, I guess, and then Hannah has kind of like the case against on Slashfilm. So I encourage people to check that out if they're interested at all in, you know, cases like this.
Because I certainly don't want to like color anyone's, you know, like again, it's a big deal. But yeah, after I sort of did my digging in, I was able to kind of, I knew where I fell on it, but.
Yeah. Okay, so let's take a break, and then we have a bunch more things to talk about right after this.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
All right, so the live-action Bambi remake at Disney has lost its Oscar-winning director. Tell me a little bit about that, Ryan.
Yeah, so this broke, I think, right before South by started. Sarah Polley, who won an Oscar for her movie Women Talking a couple of years ago, had been set to do a live-action remake of watching Bambi's mom get shot to death. Yeah, which was, you know, the one thing we've all always wanted to see in live action is just that adorable deer just getting, you know, nerfed and then having her child sit by her dead body. So Sarah Polley has quietly left the project. It's a little unclear when it happened. It was in a larger report from The Wrap, sort of going over Sean Bailey's departure as a Walt Disney Motion Picture Productions president. Bailey was, for those that don't know, Bailey leaving is significant because he was kind of the one that sort of put these live action remakes into, he's kind of the one that made them happen. Like, so
yeah,
a lot
he like supercharged that strategy at Disney.
Right. And that's a lot of money over the last, you know, dozen years. So yeah, it's, you know, that's him leaving is not insignificant. So there's just this little mention that they do have some live action remakes still coming down the pipeline, like the Lilo and Stitch one is filming right now. I forgot there's one or two others.
There's the live action Snow White movie got delayed to next year, so that's still coming.
This project is sort of in question. Polly being attached to it sort of lent it a heck of a lot of credibility, Sarah Polley, aside from, you know, being making movies like Take This Waltz and Women Talking, also, you know, was an actor for a long time. I coincidentally, the night before the story broke, had rewatched Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead remake in which she stars. But the only weird thing that sort of people were connecting some dots is that Bob Iger, Disney CEO, was at the Morgan Stanley Investor Conference a couple days before that and had mentioned that the studio had killed a few projects that we just didn't feel were strong enough. He didn't mention any by name, but it, you know, given what happened with like Pinocchio on Disney Plus, and so, you know, maybe they just didn't think Bambi was something that needed to press forward. So, you know.
Yeah. So we should say that David Greenbaum is the guy who has replaced Sean Bailey. And this is like very inside baseball stuff. But for people who like really care about, you know, the movies that Disney is releasing, I feel like this is important information to know, sort of background information. He ran Fox Searchlight, which is now Searchlight Pictures, for something like 14 years. And now he is the one in charge of production at Disney, basically. And according to Puck, David Greenbaum pitched his philosophy to Disney with one question. And the question was, does this movie need to exist? Which is kind of an interesting way to get a job like that. And certainly seems like it's sort of, one could argue that that's like the opposite tack that Disney has been taking over the past, whatever, 15 years or something. And the thing about Bob Iger that you mentioned is really interesting, because I'm going to read some of his quote here. You have to kill things you no longer believe in. And that's not easy in this business, because either you've gotten started, you have some sunk costs, or it's a relationship with either your employees or with the creative community. It's not an easy thing, but you've got to make those tough calls. We actually have made those tough calls. We've not been that public about it, but we've killed a few projects already that we just didn't feel were strong enough. I wonder if this means, you know, combined with the David Greenbaum sort of appointment and his new approach, combined with Sarah Polley not being on this Bambi project, I wonder if we're getting to, you know, the end of Disney's live action remake period. Like, that could be an exciting, this could be an exciting sort of creative shot in the arm for Disney. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, or because Greenbaum, again, Fox Searchlight, he ran a very prestigious banner, and to have him at the top, I think, like, because that doesn't sort of mean sequels won't happen or these live action remakes won't happen. It's just that it's got to have a damn good reason to happen. And I look at something like, now I know it didn't work out financially, but when you're making the movie Pete's Dragon, I think you and I have talked about this movie a little bit. The Pete's Dragon live action remake is maybe Disney's best live action remake and nobody talks about it. But like, I can absolutely see, like, you go in there and go, we should remake Pete's Dragon, and somebody goes, why does this exist? And then they pitch that version of it, and you're like, yeah, totally, that should exist. So I think there's absolutely a possibility that some of these still happen. It's just got the bar for clearance might be a little higher, you know, not just, like, do it to do it. So I don't know. I'm curious about that. I think this could, and I think the industry's changing a lot, right? You know, we just saw Oppenheimer win Best Picture. Like, we had a lot of things, you know, is a billion-dollar movie that was 3 hours R-rated and where guys talk about science. I know I've said that joke before, but like, but it is pretty amazing that that's, you know, like a global blockbuster on the level of The Lord of the Rings. So, you know, I do, and with superhero movies, so I think that Disney needs to adjust. It's what it's been doing, and I think having a guy like that up top does help, and I think maybe looking at something like Bambi and saying, does this need to exist? Maybe it doesn't. Kill it. Let's move on. So I'm into
this. Yeah, and Greenbaum's credits, like, if you go to his IMDb page, there's not everything that's listed, but, like, a lot of stuff that's listed, it looks like he has a pretty good resume, you know, as a either a development executive or a production executive or something. He's got movies like No Country for Old Men, There Will Be Blood, you know, The Tree of Life, Brooklyn.
The dude's got a good eye.
Yes, Stoker, Shape of Water, Grand Budapest Hotel. I mean, yeah, like, the idea that this person is now in charge of what movies get made at Disney is encouraging to me. And also, IndieWire had a report recently that said there's a sense that Disney will focus more on originality and creativity rather than digging deeper into its IP library. And there's also a quote that says there is an appetite internally for something new at the studio. So, yeah, this could be like an exciting time for Disney, like pivoting into a slightly different direction, or at least like a different approach.
It seems like he's one of those executives that like filmmakers like, which is not super common, you know, like, or like, you know, because like his executives are usually the bad guys, but he seems like one of those ones that, like, you know, so I don't know. Yeah, this could be interesting.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to wrap up today's episode by just like sort of clearing space and having you tell me a little bit about some Daisy Ridley quotes that you got from attending a panel that she was at South by Southwest. You have two articles up on Slash Film: Why Star Wars Actress Daisy Ridley is Nervous About Returning as Rey, and then she's also in a new action movie from the director of Casino Royale, and it sounds awesome. So tell me about those two things.
Yeah, so Daisy Ridley's down at South by. She's currently filming a movie called We Bury the Dead, but she came down to promote. She's got a movie, Magpie, at the festival, which I haven't had a chance to see yet. I'm hoping I can catch a screening later in the week. But she actually like came up with the idea for the movie, so I think she's credited with the story, and then she kind of produced. So there's like a big, you know, she was really heavily involved. But so she did this panel and just kind of covered her career in general. And but obviously they touched on the upcoming Star Wars movie. And look, let's sit, put this right up front. She can't really say anything about it. So these quotes weren't like, you know, mind blowing, but I found it a little interesting. So, just sort of talking about the way it was presented was like, how do you feel coming back to Rey now that you've done, you know, she's done it's really interesting. You look at like what she's done post Star Wars. She has done like, you know, she's done like thrillers. She's done action movies. She's done like narrating documentaries. She's doing like a biopic about a swimmer. You know, she's done a lot of different stuff. So Daisy Ridley sort of talked about that. And she said, it feels so strange. I think the reality is that I just don't know how it'll be till I'm there. Also, I was excited to be a part of it when I thought, and then I thought, what if I can't remember how to play her? It's such an odd thing. Because it also was a surprise. It was only last year. I had a breakfast. I thought it was for something else, and it wasn't. So it's exciting. And basically, that story's come out where she went to go meet with Kathy Kennedy. She didn't know what it was for. And then Kennedy sort of presented her with this, and she was like, what? You know, like she genuinely didn't know that it was a thing. So, and then she also talked a little bit more. She said, I think I'll maybe not be as terrified on the first day, but there is a certain amount of what if I can't do it? All of the what ifs are very strange. But I'm excited about the story. As you say, a lot has happened in my life and my career. So I feel like a different performer. I feel like a different person. So I'm curious. And also working with a new director. But also it's like, what discoveries will we make? It's all at this time to be discovered. And I'm excited, nervous really, to see how it goes. So, you know, I think she's just more expressing a lot of trepidation and excitement all at the same time. Yeah, like I said, not a lot, but there was the nervousness comes from she's done so much. She's gotten pretty far from Rey at this point. So she's like, you know, can I circle back to that comfortably? And I think that's really what she's getting at. But
I'm interested in the idea that she's done a bunch of stuff since that. Like, I'm thinking of sometimes I think about Dying, the indie movie that she was in that played at Sundance a couple years ago.
It's supposedly getting a digital release here shortly, but.
Yeah, that one's finally coming out soon. So, like, yeah, the idea that she's going to return to Rey as, like, a different performer, essentially. Somebody who, you know, that was the thing with her casting. She came out of nowhere to play, to get, like, this, you know, highly coveted role in the industry and sort of launched her career on, like, the biggest possible stage that you could have as an actor. Yeah. But she hadn't really done that much before then. So the idea that now she will have, you know, bounce around to a bunch of different genres, doing this action movie that we're going to talk about in a second, you know, just become more of a seasoned performer and then coming back to Rey at a later point in that character's life where that character will also have gone through some stuff and been through more of life and things like that too. Just feels like it might help, you know, lend itself to a better performance or a more interesting performance or something like that. Not that she was not, you know, arguably one of the best parts of the entire trilogy, the sequel trilogy already. But yeah, just more of a veteran approach, I guess, coming at it. So,
well, right. And also, if you're looking at the idea of that movie being, I've heard it's like 15 years after the end of Rise of Skywalker, and like you need, that's a long time to sort of develop as a Jedi. And sort of, so like, yeah, you do need, it's going to require something different. I love Rey as a character. I love Daisy Ridley. Like, so I was interested about it. And I, you know, I don't know. I sort of appreciate the, like, not just approaching things with like, I'd rather not talk about it, or like just like a weird air of confidence. Like, I appreciate that she's sort of putting out there like, yeah, hey, I am a little nervous about it. Like, I don't know, that charmed me a bit. We should talk about the thing I'm most excited about.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So I don't know. Have you heard about Cleaner at all? This was announced last year, and I was very excited about it when it was sort of announced.
It was kind of like a Daisy Ridley gets her own Die Hard type of thing, right?
Yeah, and there was like a very detailed plot synopsis when it came out, which I don't quite want to get into here because like this sounds so cool that I would rather, like, if you don't want to know everything, great. But I encourage you, you don't even have to go to our article, but if you go, there is one single image that has been released for this movie called Cleaner, and it's just Daisy Ridley like in a Strokes t-shirt and a hoodie with like bloody gloves on, and
it's at the top of our article. It's really easy for people to get in the show and notes. Like, so.
But yeah, it is. Oh boy, am I! I just, as soon as that picture came out, I was like, I just, please put this directly into my veins. So she talked a little bit about it at the panel, because there's not as much secrecy around this as there is like Star Wars, right? So Martin Campbell is directing this, and Martin Campbell directed The Mask of Zorro, Casino Royale, GoldenEye. He launched two eras of Bond with their respective best Bond movies. Like, the guy, you know, the guy's made some absolute bangers in his day. He's also made some, you know, really bad movies like Green Lantern. It's fascinating. But based on what I heard from Ridley at the panel, it sounds like we're getting vintage Campbell here. She was talking about like things that have been difficult in her career, and she's got this movie called Young Woman in the Sea coming out, and she was kind of comparing it to that, and she thought like, so I'll say, she said, I thought that was the toughest thing on my body I had done. And then I did an action movie with the amazing Martin Campbell, which is the movie I did before Christmas. And I was like, ow, everything hurts. then she went on a little more. Said it's a fun it's fun in a Martin Campbell way. I play a window cleaner who is ex-army, knows how to use a gun, all of the useful things in an action film. I'm outside of the building when a team of eco-activists storm the building, and I have to fight my way in tandem with the police outside, and try to find my brother and try to save the people who have been taken hostage. Hell yes. I'm very into the conceptually, and then I'll just give you this last quote, and we can talk about it if you want. The on-set, she talked a little bit about the on-set vibes here, and there's a quote that I really love. She said, it's very exciting. The action is brutal. I was rewatching all of Martin's films as we went, and what a filmmaker. Amazing performances, always a lot of humor, and amazing action set pieces. So I felt all of the action is what people think of with Martin oftentimes, but also emotionally, it was wonderful working with him. Such a taskmaster. Many, 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 many takes. One of his notes was, didn't feel it that time, try again. One of the things he said to an actor was, fake. Literally. It was amazing to work with someone so laser focused on condition and togetherness. So like apparently Martin Campbell had no compunction about telling someone that a take sucked, which I thought.
Yeah, was sounds like he absolutely suffers no fools. And I'm guessing different actors have different performance styles and react differently to something like that. But it's interesting that she came directly from, you know, basically saying like he pulls no punches to saying that he is focused on condition and togetherness, which kind of seems like, you know, one might assume from that earlier part of her quote that Martin Campbell is like some sort of tyrant on set or something. But for her to follow it up with that togetherness remark kind of makes it seem like, I don't know, maybe he's found a way to strike the difference of the different types of directing styles that you hear about sometimes.
Yeah, people seem to like to work with him. Like even like on some of those bad movies he's made, it's not like anyone's, you know, like saying like Martin Campbell's an asshole. Like that's not, yeah. You know what I mean? Like that's not what I've heard. You know,
no,
I've heard
a lot of bad things. That's not his reputation, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of bad things about Green Lantern. I've not heard people talking crap about him. You know, yeah, I don't know. I'm tremendously excited about this. And I'm not, like, putting on airs. I really am, like, this is way, way, way toward the top of my list of things I'm looking forward to seeing this year.
So. Yeah, I know you're a huge Daisy Ridley fan. And then also just, like, the premise of this sounds pretty, irresistible in a way. The thing where she said... I'm looking at her quote here. I'm outside the building when a team of eco-activists storm the building and I have to fight my way in. Like eco-activists, I'm kind of like on their side now, especially after, you know, like how to blow up a pipeline and just the news, like gestures at everything, like the way that the world is going. So if you're
also like, but also I think that like that's so sort of opposite of like Die Hard is just the most generic terrorists of all time, which is what I love about Die Hard. They are just European dudes who want money.
The whole thing is like they seem like terrorists, but they're actually just bank robbers, basically.
They just want money. It's one of my favorite things about Die Hard. It's not more complicated than that. But this, it sounds like, you know, instead of just having like a lazy Die Hard ripoff, it's like, well, maybe these guys might have a point, but maybe they're going about it in a way that's like a little insane. Mm-hmm. You know, so like there could be like some sympathy with the criminals there. And I like that idea. Like, you know, but like, it's like, hey, look, I understand what you're doing, but you can't take hostages. You can't kill my brother. Like, there's a lot of stuff already here that I'm like, ooh, yay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm with you. Like, you know, like, again, after How to Blow Up a Pipeline, I'm like, yeah, how do I disagree with the eco-terrorists? But like, so I don't know. I'm so excited about this.
Yeah. It sounds like it could be, really complex and nuanced and interesting, which is always like a shade of action movies that I appreciate instead of just like good guys,
and
bad guys.
Also,
kind of thing.
Daisy Ridley in a Bloody Strokes t-shirt. Also, like, cannot mention that enough.
Well, I'm holding out hope that this movie ends up rising to the heights that you clearly have, it deserves the pedestal that you've put it on already, Ryan, but we'll see about that. So yes, I encourage people to stay tuned to Slash Film for much more South by Southwest coverage. You can find much more about all of that stuff at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Please send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.